Very good. So, this is the last full day of the retreat. You'll still be staying here, many of you, tonight, but on Sunday morning we'll be having a big ceremony over in Bodhinyana Monastery. It'll be a bit noisy. So usually, the last day of the retreat, we do allow people to start talking, so you don't have to have noble silence anymore. But anyhow, for the program today, because I really should be over at Bodhinyana Monastery this evening just to check in with the monks and make sure everything is okay there. And that's, you know, where I'll be probably sleeping tonight, in my cave tonight. So I know many of you are going to go and visit there this afternoon at 1 o'clock, which is fine. But please clear out by 6 or 7 so that I can reclaim my cave. And not only that, for this afternoon, the morning program as usual, but for this afternoon at 3 p.m, no sutta class, but instead I'm going to use the opportunity to answer the last few, hopefully, questions and answers, the Q&A, because it won't be this evening. And then after the Q&A is complete, then maybe about 3:45, just have a quick break, and at 4:30 to do the guided loving kindness meditation, which I've got into the habit of doing that to the last official part of every retreat. And so that'll be maybe 4 to 4:30, and then after that it will be a few blessings as usual, photos. We did the official photo, but now we do the unofficial ones. And the unofficial ones, usually we try and do the photos, the official photos, the group photos, before the end of the retreat. Because if you do them at the end of the retreat, people always look sad. They're going home. They've got to go back to work. So that's one of the reasons why people would show me these photographs of these really strict retreats. You know those retreats where you have to get up early in the morning, and if you don't actually appear, they send a couple of people there to drag you to the meditation hall. You have to sit for 50 minutes, you can't talk whatsoever, you can't use mobile phones, it really is very strict. And people said, but look how happy they are. They had a group photograph. I said, yes, because that's done at the end of the retreat. They're going home now. So anyway, the story I was going to begin with today, which is a really important story, it's maybe a little bit of a long story, but it's worth it. Because sometimes when we go on a retreat, now why do we do this? Is it just to get jhanas and enlightenment, or is it to live a happy, peaceful life? Is it to, you know, overcome cancers, to get healthy? You know, why do we come on retreat, and what do we get out of it? There's so many things which you manage to see more clearly, and which actually do change your life and make you a happier, more peaceful person. It's not just temporary. Because little by little, these retreats, they do get very deep inside of you. New ways of looking at problems. Being more accepting to the people you live with, and to your health, and to everything else. And not expecting so much. And I was just reminded a bit earlier. Please excuse me, during the last week, I've given so many talks. So many instructions. And there's no way that I can know whether I told this story before during this retreat. But I'm going to repeat it anyway. It was the story about the backpacker story. And they're going to a restaurant where they had too much, what's that called again? The pickled cabbage, sauerkraut. Remember the sauerkraut story? This is a nice one to repeat at this part of the retreat. when it's getting to the end of the retreat, when people start to think of the things which went wrong, when they start to complain. And, because sometimes they always complain somewhere or other down the line. So please remember the sauerkraut. Remember what the story was? The American backpacker, he was working in a restaurant in Vienna, and the owner had ordered too much sauerkraut, heaps of sauerkraut. It was a mistaken order. But he was stuck with it, and so he told all the staff, if you're going to eat free food at all, it has to be sauerkraut. Sauerkraut and sauerkraut and sauerkraut. Nothing else but sauerkraut. Which many people love. To somebody like Amandus, that would be like heaven. He loves his sauerkraut. But most people hate it. So anyway, the American said, you can't do this to us, it's not right. It's unfair, this is not what we signed up to. And of course that's when the elderly chef came to see him. And I always remember this story. He said, I'm going to tell you the difference between an irritation and a problem. Because sometimes we get so upset, which is just irritation. It's not a big thing. But we know problems, they are big things. And he said, difference between an irritation and a problem. He said, about 20 years ago, said the chef, that it was during the Second World War, he was in Auschwitz. And he showed the tattoo, the number which he had on his arm. He said, every morning when I woke up, I didn't know whether I'd be alive that evening, whether that was my last day on earth. Because many of my friends and relations, my companions, they were chosen and disappeared in the day. We all knew what happened to them. They were killed. He said, living in Auschwitz is a problem. Eating sauerkraut morning, afternoon and evening is only an irritation. So please know the difference between an irritation and a problem. Which means, yeah, maybe the electricity went out. Maybe you couldn't catch the internet. Maybe you were tired. Maybe the person in the room sitting next to you was the person who always got up at 1 o'clock in the morning to make their tea. And as I said before, they'll just make a tea. It's amazing just how noisy it can be making a cup of tea and stirring it all up. 1 o'clock in the morning, why do they choose that time? Maybe we should get them a thermos so they can make it before they go to bed. But anyway, those are sort of things called irritations. They're not really problems. So because of that, you can see that often we amplify and exaggerate things. And it's also the same with fear. Because a couple of monk and fear stories. Once there was, this was Ajahn Juan in Putok told me this one. I was laughing all over my face when he told me this. Because sometimes we think that monks are really serious, but some of the monks have got the greatest sense of humor. I am not unique in telling jokes. I'm just following an old tradition. And this was the monk Ajahn Juan in the far northeast of Thailand. And he said that there was one of the forest monks some time ago that he wandered and he got to a village, and it used to be the case you'd tell the person in the village, the headman usually, that you've come to stay for a couple of days, because the people in the village needed to know there was a monk going to come on arms round the next day so they could prepare some extra food. And also they could tell him the nice places in the forest where he could put up his mosquito net umbrella to stay for the night, where there was no water nearby. So when he checked in with the headman of the village, the headman said, look, it's probably best if you stay in the village tonight. He said, no, I can't do that. I'm a forest monk. He said, look, there's a tiger, roaming around. He's already killed a number of water buffalo and even taken a couple of children as well. It's a very dangerous tiger. And the monk said, I am not afraid of tigers. I'm a forest monk. Show me where the tiger trails are, and that's where I'm going to put my mosquito net umbrella tonight. I'm going to confront my fears and face the tiger. If I die, well, then I die as a monk, not as a coward. Okay, said the headman. So with a few other men, they sort of went to the outside, maybe a kilometer outside the village, and there along one of the roads, not big road, I mean just a dirt track, where they would actually walk or take their carts to the next village, you could see the tiger path crossing it where it went into the jungle. And the monk said, right here, I am going to put my mosquito net umbrella. So they helped him. They were quite impressed, you know, because they wouldn't do that. And so they helped set him up, and then they said, if you're still alive, we'll see you in the morning for the arms round. And off they went, and he stayed there in the dark forest, all by himself. And at night time, in the forest, there's no lights at all. It's pitch black. You can't see anything. But you can hear. And usually in the evening, once the cicadas start to settle down, it becomes quite peaceful. You know, after twilight, maybe an hour later, then it starts to calm down. And so we're sitting there, nice and peaceful and calm, enjoying the tranquility of the jungle. And things were going well. He was doing the old meditation on Buddha, Buddha. And they've heard that, that's one of the Thai forest traditions. So Buddha. And he got very tranquil, but he could still feel his breath. But he could also hear a sound of some jungle animal. It was a long way away. It didn't feel that, or sound that noisy. So he just carried on watching his breath. But he did notice, instead of going, Buddha, his breath started to change. Buddha, 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 Buddha. And as the animal came closer, he thought, oh my goodness, this is a big animal. And he couldn't open his eyes, and if he did, it wouldn't mean anything because he couldn't see what it was. And his breath changed again. Buddha, 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 Buddha. And as it came closer, he did open his eyes, and there was enough moonlight or starlight, he could actually see this was this huge tiger. A really big, wild forest tiger, monk-eating tiger. And he didn't say Buddha anymore. Tiger, 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 tiger. Breathing in Thai, breathing out go. Tiger, tiger. In Thai, Sir Klong, Sir Klong, Sir Klong. And he said the next thing, once he realized his breath was going really fast and it changed from Buddha, Buddha to tiger, tiger, tiger. The next thing he knew, and he said he didn't know how this happened. He'd actually got out of his mosquito net umbrella, and he was running towards the village. You know, that time, how he got out of the tent, you know, like mosquito net tent, and then started running, he couldn't recall that at all. But then he was running. And just, instead of just saying it quietly, tiger, tiger, he was shouting it, tiger, tiger, tiger! Now, you've all been watching me for the last week, even sitting here. When I give talks, I like to make them animated. And so and I put a lot of energy into them. And because of that, sometimes, you know, the robe falls off. Imagine you're running. There is a reason why monks aren't supposed to run. And I think you probably understand that reason. So for this monk, first of all, his outer robe fell off. Tiger, tiger! And he wasn't being mindful about how he looked. He was mindful of the tiger racing behind him. And then his inner robe fell off. Tiger, tiger, tiger! And then by the time he got into the village, all his robes were off. And of course, because he was shouting, tiger, 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 he woke up all the village, they opened their windows, they came out onto the verandas and had a look. And there they saw the monk who wasn't afraid of tigers. They saw him completely. Every part of it. Because he had no robes on at all. And so sometimes we might say, oh, we're not afraid, you know, there's... And so we don't really know until it actually happens. But with fear, it's so fascinating to see how fear works. And my story, because I'd heard that before, and so I was in the jungle meditating, you know, just by myself, my mosquito net and umbrella, and just a little, I'd use the bathing cloth to sit on. And I was sitting there, dark. I did have a flashlight. But you know, you can't use it too often because, you know, it's very hard to get new batteries. So I was sitting there in the dark, meditating. Nice and peaceful. And then I heard an animal coming through the forest. You can hear the animals because they can crunch the leaves and the twigs. And it's very hard for an animal to actually move silently through the forest. Snakes can sometimes do that, but even then, you can hear them. But this was an animal on the ground. And of course, you know, I was wary, but not scared. So I just listened to it with all my mindfulness. So that's not a big animal, that's just a small animal. So it's not a problem at all. Maybe an irritation, but not a problem, it's not going to eat me. So then I closed my eyes and carried on my meditation, just watching my breath, getting more and more peaceful. I didn't do the Buddha thing, I just watched my breath as it was. And then I could hear the sound as it crunched the twig, or more like a branch. I said, that cannot be a small animal. That's a medium-sized animal. Could be like a mouse deer, a civet cat or something, but it's not a tiny one. Tiny ones don't make that noise, because this was quite a loudish noise. But still it was no problem at all. So I carried on meditating. And then I heard it sort of breaking quite a big twig or a branch or something. And I realized, hang on, that little civet cats, they don't do that. That's a big animal. And as I was listening to it intently, the sound it made was really loud. I thought, oh my goodness, that's probably a tiger. Could be a bear. There's bears over there in Thailand. Not these teddy bears, but dangerous bears. And could be a tiger. And at that point I did get scared. Oh my goodness, what am I going to do? I remember that story. I know Ajahn Chah used to tell me, look, there's been no cases he knows of a tiger eating a monk. And I argued with him and said, well, there wouldn't be reported cases, would there? There'd be nothing left of the monk and the tiger wouldn't confess. So how do you know that tigers haven't eaten monks? So anyway, so there you were. And I was there and I thought, oh my goodness, this is a tiger, what should I do? And you get more and more scared. I'll just sit there, don't do anything. But then, you know, the noise gets louder and louder, you get more and more scared. So okay, I picked up my flashlight. And I turned it on, I looked for the tiger. I couldn't see it. What was making this noise? I looked and looked and looked and looked and then I saw it. It was a mouse. A tiny mouse, about this big, going through the... It's true. Going through the jungle, and because of fear, I had exaggerated that mouse to be a tiger about to eat me. That's what fear does. Even like sound. The sound gets amplified and you start to interpret it. That's not just small animals, that's a tiger, nothing else crunches and pushes the trees over like that. And so that taught me a wonderful lesson about fear. It exaggerates and amplifies and it makes this world far more scary than it really is. And I've used that to my advantage so many times. Just like, yes, exactly. Just like that time that was meditating and nimittas and fear. I was meditating one day, quite a long time ago now, and as I was meditating, getting very peaceful, and a light came into my mind, just a not very strong light, and then another one followed it. And the one which followed it was war. It was a face. And the face had these eyes which were red and bulging out. And the eyebrows were low in the middle and coming up. And I looked down and it had its teeth. They weren't teeth. They were fangs. They were pointed with some red stuff dripping down from them. Their hair, this was way before the years of the punks, was spiky. And you could see that it had a necklace of human skulls. And its hands came up like claws. Oh, its tongue was hanging out. Ah! In front of me. What would you do? I'm a monk, I know what these things are. With bulging eyes. And I thought, I can recognize that. Because I was in one of those, I think, Tibetan temples or something a few days ago, and that's what they have on the temple drawings. Have you ever seen those monsters, the yakas? And that's what, you know, it was my mind interpreting the most scary object. So instead of getting afraid, you know, which maybe I would have done years before, I thought this was really fun. A great monster has come to visit me. Thank you for coming. Now look at your eyes. Your eyes are almost bulging out. You know, that must be because you've got some sort of, what's that stuff when you have on your eyes, which is irritating. You've got some sort of disease of your it's not retina. What's this stuff on there? Like corneitis or something? I don't know. But on the cornea of your eyes. And it was just so bulging out. They were so red. So I just imagined a pair of sunglasses, Ray-Bans, and put them over its bulging eyes, out of compassion, of course. And so it's spiky hair. And the spiky hair, you've got to be very careful in this sort of climate about skin cancer. I'll put like a nice Australian sun hat on it, with the flower coming out, just to make it look good. And then I thought, yeah, that's those fangs. You need to, I blacked out some of its fangs. You know, like sometimes you used to do at school, doodling? So it looked like it needed to go to see the monster dentist pretty quickly because to get some dental treatments. And I did that. I was messing around with the image of a demon until that demon looked so funny that I burst out laughing during my meditation. I actually humiliated that monster and it never ever came back to bother me again. You can't mess around with Ajahn Brahm, otherwise you get humiliated. So those monsters may come and see you next door in cottage number one or cottage number two. They will never come and see me. You're just humiliated. But what was doing, it was understanding it's a fear which was the problem. And when you replace fear with a bit of fun, messing around, play, you cannot have fun and fear at the same time. So that's one of the reasons why that even giving public talks, if any of you ever have to give a public talk, get a couple of jokes which you have just inside and tell those jokes. When you start laughing, everyone else starts laughing, all your fear vanishes and you have a wonderful time. You just relax and enjoy. So that's one of the reasons why fear one of the things which controls us. Even when I was a school teacher, one of the teachers gave me this piece of advice, and it was that if you make a mistake and all the children in your class start laughing at you, then you laugh as well. And then the world never laughs at you, it only laughs with you. And there's a total change. You make a mistake, and then you start laughing as well. And then just, you don't have to be perfect. So, I've done that many times. Okay, some of my famous mistakes. Oh, there was One which comes to mind is very many. It's very hard to choose between all the mistakes I've made in my life, which were funny. But this one was, you know, the interviews we have from meditation retreats. This was over in Malaysia. So this young lady came in for an interview, and she, you know, brought a guy with her, and only had 10 minutes. So she was talking about her lot of problems and stuff, and then the guy didn't say a word. And please excuse me for stereotyping sort of Asian relationships. So because he was so quiet, I say, oh, is that your husband? I get in big trouble with that. You know, in Asia, when people get married, I always say that it's like, you know, before you were a single person, and you could go wherever you wanted. But now you're married, it's like one body with four legs. You're connected. And those legs have to go in the same direction, otherwise the elephant falls over. So because Asian culture, the front legs of the elephant have to be the male. I'm sorry, ladies, but that's the culture tradition. You know that. And the back legs have to be the woman. But in places like Thailand, Suri, you know, the elephant walks backwards. Sometimes I think that's a joke, but there's a lot of truth in that one. But anyway, where was I going with this? Somewhere about marriage and... That's your job, to remind me where I was going with this. Okay. Yeah, you don't either. Okay, crikey. There's a trouble with, like, monks, because I was giving this... it was the conference, and it was talking about, like, dementia and meditation, whether meditation could actually help overcome the problems with dementia. But, of course, it was the expert, the doctor who spent most of his life researching dementia, he talked first of all. And after his presentation, when I got up, I thought, oh my goodness me, I'd have to be quite clear and confess. Because for so many years, because, you know, he said, the signs of dementia, you can't remember the past, you can't plan for the future, and you're socially disengaged. And I said, I've been teaching my monks to do that for years. And you said, let go of the past. Don't worry about the future. And just be by yourself in solitude, meditating, be socially disengaged. So you know the cause of dementia these days is us, monks. We're teaching you to do that. But there you go. So, interview in Malaysia, that's exactly right. Of course I knew that all along, I was just testing him. Well, anyway, that because, you know, that after the interview, and just towards the end, I asked the girl, I said, oh, is that your husband? And oh, they both burst out laughing. And it took a while to sort of calm them down. I said, what's so funny? And she said, I'm only 16. And he said, that's my dad. And you know, that they weren't offended at all. Because remember when you were only 16 years of age? And I said, oh, you look more like in your mid-20s. He said, really? Because when you're very young, you know, there's so many places you can't go, things you can't do. But, you know, when you look, I said, oh, you look much older than 16, maybe in your mid-20s. He said, really? I mean, I can drive a car and I can go in a nightclub. And especially that their father, I said, you only look about 30. Really, he said. I look that young. So both were just so happy that I misjudged their age. And they did decide. They went out of the interview with a big smile on their faces. And then they came back 5 minutes later with an ang pao, with a lycee, you know, with a donation. And it was $100 Australian. And on the outside it would say, this is for your temple, but please use some of it to check the prescription on your glasses. So isn't it wonderful when you make a mistake? The temple makes some money out of it, and you have another story to tell on retreats. So there's actually much you learn in a retreat like this, some of these stories, which bring happiness and joy and laughter to your life and take away a lot of the stress which you have in your life. And of course, what a wonderful thing that is. Even again, on the subject of Malaysia, this gentleman came up to see me when I was there a few years ago. And he told me, he said, look, he didn't actually tell me what family he belonged to, but he said, my father is a billionaire. But, he said, I had some problems, you know, with my health and my attitude, and I was getting depressed. And he said, so my father sent me to the Mayo Clinic in Cleveland. That is where all these millionaires and movie stars and rock stars, that's where they go for therapy or detoxing or whatever else there is in vogue. And he said, he was under Jon Kabat-Zinn and all these other amazing people, Daniel Goleman. And he said, number one, they're all Buddhists. And number two, he said, they teach exactly what you teach, Ajahn Brahm. But you're in my hometown and you don't charge anything. I was stupid going all that way, paying all that money, when I could have got it in my hometown for free. And actually better. Because now you get it from the source, you know, from good monks instead of second hand. So anyway, sometimes you just wonder, but these are very great teachings and great sort of helpful advice so that you can keep your head above water in life. And it brings me to the story which I was supposed to be telling about 30 minutes ago. Which is, you know, why come on a retreat? What do you get out of this? So this was a story of the old sailor and the professor. Now, first of all, if there are any professors come on retreats, any story which involves a professor, the professor always ends up on the wrong end of wisdom. Even, I'll get out of tangent, even I'm going to check you out now, see if you understand this story. It was supposed to be a story with Mahatma Gandhi and his professor, because Gandhi had to learn, law, had to go to London to study law. And apparently Gandhi and his professor just did not get on at all. Even when he did an exam, in law, which he had to do, and the professor just wrote on the bottom of the paper, idiot. That's how much he sort of disliked Gandhi. And so Mr. Gandhi came up to the professor and said, your paper, sir, which you've just, you're supposed to have marked, you just got the word idiot on it. He said, yes, that's what you deserve. Well, sir, you haven't given me a mark, you've just signed it. And so later on, so the professor decided to check out this Gandhi. He said, Mr. Gandhi, suppose you were walking down one of the streets in London, and you saw these two baskets, and one basket contained lots of money, and the other basket contained wisdom. And you could only pick one up. Which one would you pick up? And Gandhi said, the money, of course. That's a problem with you Orientals. You're just into money, that's all. And I would pick up wisdom. So that's to be expected, Professor. We always pick up what we don't already have.
Yeah.
very careful. Anyway, the professor and the old sailor. So the these were the days when the people would go from place to place, country to country, in these big sailing boats, these passenger boats. And it's like the Titanic, but not as advanced. So one day this professor, he was going, let's make it interesting, he was going from Hong Kong to Jakarta to give some lectures. And the first night on the boat, after dinner, the professor went for a walk on the deck. And there he saw this old sailor man. He was just so ancient that he decided, I'd have a conversation with the old man. And the old man was looking down into the waves. And the professor came next to him and said, "Old man, how long have you sailed these oceans?" He said, "Ever since I was a small boy. Ever since I was a small boy, I was a sailor, and now I'm so old I can't even remember how many years it is I've been sailing this world." "Great," said the professor. "You know, one of my hobbies is marine science. You must know so much about all the animals. You know, the whales and the dolphins and the manta rays and all these animals. And also the currents, you know, which flow under your boat. You've been living all your life at sea. You must be almost an expert on marine science." And the sailor said, "Marine what?" "Marine science! Don't know anything about it. All I know is the water's wet and salty." "What? You mean all those years sailing the oceans, you never even bothered to pick up a book and learn about the world underneath your boat?" "Nope." "Wow! You stupid old man! What a waste of a life." And the professor just walked off in disgust. Second night at sea, it was a beautiful meal they had, and a very clear night. And so when the professor went up onto deck, he saw the old man, the old sailor man, looking up at the stars. Like, you know, sometimes we've had some clear nights in Jhana Grove, but unfortunately the moon is up, it's a bit light. You can't see the stars, the Milky Way, when it's just at its peak. But never mind. But this time at the sea, there was no light at all, and the stars were just so brilliant. And the professor said, "Oh man, these stars, before the time of GPS, this is the stars which have guided your ship to make sure it gets to its destination without getting lost. And you must have lived under these stars and looked at them for so many years." "Yes, all my life I've seen these stars." "So you must be an expert on astronomy, because that's one of my other hobbies, astronomy. Now let's talk about astronomy." "Astro what?" said the stars, said the old sailor. "Said astronomy. I don't know anything about astronomy, I just know they're stars, twinkle, twinkle, that's about all." "What, all those years at sea, you've never picked up a book to learn about the heavens above you?" "Nope." "Wow, what a waste of a life, what a waste of a life, you stupid old man, you stupid old man," and he walks away. Now, of course, you know there's another evening, because everything is done in threes in Buddhism, so you know that something else is going to happen. On the third night, the cook was such, he performed so well, he outdid his best dishes, it was an incredible delicious meal. So the professor was in such a good mood, when he went up on deck, he decided to give the old sailor a last chance. Because one of these evenings at sea, when a soft, fragrant breeze was wafting over the ocean, and the professor said to that old man, "You know, old man, that marine science is a hobby, same as astronomy, but my speciality is meteorology, the study of the weather systems. And the weather systems are probably more important than anything else to a sailor in these days, because, you know, the storms can sink your boat, they can actually drive you off course. So you must know a lot about meteorology. Let's discuss meteorology. Maybe I'll get some more insights for the lecture series I'm going to give in Jakarta. And the sailor man said, "Meaty what?" I know, like meat pie, or meat. Meteorology? What's that? Is that the study of the study of carnivore eating? I said, I don't know. But anyway, I'm just trying to make this up as I go along, as usual. But this is where I get new jokes. Some of them work, some of them don't. But anyway, that every now and again you strike gold and get a new joke to share with other people. But in this case it didn't work. But anyway, meteorology. I don't know what meteorology is. He said, "What, all these years at sea and you've never bothered to study the weather systems, the storms, the rain clouds, and the things which may keep your boat calmed and not be able to move for days?" "Nope, not at all," said the old sailor. "You stupid old man. You stupid old man." Has to be a third time. "You stupid old man. What a waste of a life, what a waste of a life, what a waste of a life." And he decided never going to talk to such an idiot before. All those years you never learned about the world around you? It's just, it's so heedless and wasteful. But the fourth night at sea, the professor never ate anything at all, because it was a very rough night at sea and he suffered from seasickness. So he decided it's much better just to stay in his cabin and rest rather than get something to eat and feel queasy. So, but that night at sea, the storm got worse and worse. And as the night grew darker and darker, as the clock got closer and closer to midnight, the storm got worse and worse and worse. And the boat was going from back, from left to right, rolling more and more precariously. It was very turbulent, rocking backwards and forwards, and the professor was getting more and more scared, more and more terrified. He couldn't go to sleep because it was really rolling. As a very rough night. Bang! There's a huge crash. And then everything went silent. And the professor's fear got to a maximum. Really past the red line of fear. He was terrified, anxious. And he didn't know what was happening. And just then, he could hear somebody running outside his cabin door in the passageway. And in terror, he opened the door, and who was outside? The old sailor man. And the old sailor man stopped, paused, and turned to see the old professor, so afraid. And he looked the old professor in the eye. And said, "Professor, in all the years at university, teaching, studying, and lecturing, have you ever learned how to swim?" "Oh, actually, no, I never got round to that," said the professor. "You stupid old professor." What a waste of a life. The ship is sinking. And the moral of that long story is to say, well, in this world, maybe studying meteorology and astronomy and marine science is interesting. But if you're travelling on a boat, the most important thing to know is how to swim in case the boat sinks. And in life, what's the most important thing to learn? To be able to keep your head above water, in spite of the uncertainties and the troubles and the storms of life, that you never sink, because you have learned how to keep things in perspective. Keep your head above water. And so, yeah, you get into difficulties and troubles sometimes, but then you never drown. That is why we come on retreats. So whatever happens in your life, welcome to life. And we never drown in depression, grief, or anger, welcome to our life. We can always keep above water. Why get angry? If you get angry, it just makes the other person feel happy. Yes, I've pushed his button. There was years ago, there were monks, and there were monks. And some of the monks have gone through all sorts of difficult troubles in their life. And this particular monk, you know, he had a difficult life, and he had a chronic migraine, really bad. And so every now and again he got a bit cranky. But it wasn't him, it was just, you know, the pain he was feeling. So this one time I was a young monk, and I was washing my alms bowl. And he decided, he came and picked on me like a bully. He looked at me and said, "Brother, that's a filthy habit." A filthy habit? What was I doing? I didn't know. The other monks were doing the same. What am I doing? You know what it's like when people try and criticize you and bully you? You know, what am I doing? So I said, "What's up?" He said, "You are drying your alms bowl with the same cloth you're using to dry your spittoon, your rubbish spit. This is a holy bowl. This comes from the tradition of the Buddha. And you're defiling it with this dirty old cloth." And of course, what I first thought of doing was to say, "Well, everyone else is doing the same. What's the problem?" But I decided to do another tack, to go a different path. I looked at him and I said, I didn't actually say anything, I just looked at him. And I put down the cloth which I was using and walked over to another batch of cloths, picked one up, went back to what I was doing, and started to dry my bowl with a nice clean cloth. I was doing exactly what he wanted me to do, but what he never expected me to do. And I remember that time, because all the other monks were quiet. They were looking to see what goes on, because life in a monastery can be very boring. So when you get a bit of drama, he's very welcome. So I said, "What's going on here? What's going to happen next?" You know that. And so they're watching me, and I do what he said. And then I started wiping my bowl with a nice clean cloth, while all the other monks, even senior to me, were with the ordinary dirty old cloths. And then I looked at him silently, and he went red in the face, beetroot coloured. And he walked away, and he never tried to bully me ever again. It's amazing. Sometimes if you know your, emotional intelligence, you know when the right time it is, somebody asks you to do something stupid, so you do it in public, so everyone else can see what you're up to. And they get so embarrassed, they never upset you, that's what they wanted me to do. They get angry. They get an argument, but I refuse to do that. I always remember that bit of emotional intelligence. Other ways of dealing with difficult problems. Or someone who's really, really, really proud. This story comes up. There was a doctor who was... Now, doctors are okay. Professors are the ones who get into trouble with my stories. So the doctor, he was having a bit of a reception. And, you know, just mostly for doctors. And so this young man, hotshot doctor came in, and the host of the party said, "Welcome, sir. Just, you know, I am just the host of the party," and said, "I'm a," and the guest said, "Oh, just, what type of doctor are you?" And he said, "I'm a GP." And his guest said, "GP, a general practitioner." And this young man said, "I am a neurosurgeon. I just fix up brains." You must admit, that's far superior. You need much more delicate touch than a GP, he said proudly with conceit. And then he introduces to his wife. He says, are you a doctor too? He said, yeah, I work for Médecins Sans Frontières in some of the most dangerous places in the world. You know, to try and help people where doctors just do not want to go. And the brain surgeon said, yeah, I suppose that's good that some people have to do that, but it's hardly brain surgery, is it? Again, he was just so conceited and arrogant. And then they introduced him to their son. He said, our son's a doctor too. What type of doctor are you? He said, oh, I work for NASA. It's far superior to being a brain surgeon. Brain surgery is hardly rocket science. So that's what happens in arrogance. Usually, the more proud you are, the more you're going to get into big trouble. So anyway, you learn so much on these retreats. I hope you can take it with you, share it around. And of course also it does help with your peace and your meditation, your tranquility. Because that's where most of the wisdom comes from. The wisdom born of stillness. Where you can just be calm and you can understand how this world works. You can be peaceful and things just do not upset you. You can just learn just how to let go, and when you let go, that you have nothing to worry about. The less you have, the more freedom you tend to have in life. So that's one of the reasons why that you come on a retreat like this and have a wonderful time, I hope. And of course, as I say in every retreat, I know that Della and maybe Susan get upset at me when I say these things, but you know, you are all allowed to ask for your money back if you didn't enjoy the retreat. I always promise that and I always keep my promises. You can always ask for your money back. You don't get it back. But you are allowed to ask. No more. So anyway, I hope you just enjoyed the retreat so far. We now have another sort of hour before, what do we do? And we have lunch. And I think it would be okay for sit down in that little corner there for any people who want to have any last bits of interviews. Is that okay, Della?
Yeah, I did put up the sheet
stuff. Yeah, but, you know, yesterday was the last time. But anyway, we always change and mess around. Nothing is certain. Yeah, even just, well, actually, just even the retreat. Shall we extend it for another week? Yeah. And we got all your plans all ready to fly away. But whatever. Anyway, so yeah, if anybody, especially if they haven't had an interview before and you want one, I'll be just outside there. Or any book side or whatever, that's a good time to do so. And in the afternoon at 3 o'clock, we just have the last Q&A. And after the Q&A, just a metta meditation. So again, I hope you enjoyed yesterday. See, you know, just, yeah, I do work hard. You can see just, you know, working here, looking after a monastery and the city centre, you know, in there just talking with the, before even doing the talking evening, you know, talking with everybody and also with our committee, making sure things are going well. And also in Dharamsala as well. So it's a quite a big sort of, I was going to say empire. But it's wonderful to see just, and of course many of you have been really involved in this. Either that there's so many Indonesian bhikkhunis. Actually, I think Ajita, where is she? Is she still here? Has she come back here or is she still in?
Yes. She's
in Dhammasana. She's in Dhammasana, yeah. So there's lots and lots of good bhikkhunis and lots and lots of good bhikkhus. Where are you from, by the way? Indonesia, yeah. So it's great that we have opportunities for people from many, many different. How many Hong Kongers have we got in Bodhinyana? Or how many people from Hong Kong? Anyway, in the future, one day, sometimes. But anyway, I think I was. Yeah, I have a partner. She can speak Cantonese, though. Yeah, anyway, so she's... Sorry? Oh, really? Oh, okay. So you're off the hook. You don't need to volunteer, Della. Okay. I can pay you already. Oh, we can always have some more. That's very good. So we'll do the sadhus, and then we can do whatever we wish to do, and have lunch, and then after lunch, go see my cave. But it's a very peaceful cave. So be very careful. We used to have a bat in that cave, but the bat's thrown away. Actually, it was auctioned off. That's a lot of trouble. Those auctions that raise money for the nuns' monastery in this place. Sometimes I go there and I think, well, what's missing now? People go and raid it. It's all for a good cause. Anyway, I don't need anything. So anyway, so now just be sadhus. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Okay. So those of you who don't want to have the interviews, you can always do some meditation. And sometimes, so this is the last day, so it's a very good time to meditate flat out. Because you had a late night.